माधव आस्था की जाय पापा की जाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं उदीरयेत् ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam 5814. This is how Maharaj Bharata became attached to a deer. Kriyayam, the activities of worshipping the Lord or performing ritualistic ceremonies. Wow. Nirvartyamanayam,
even without finishing.
Antarale, at intervals in the middle. Api, although, uttaya, uttaya, repeatedly getting up, yadaw, then, enam, the deer calf, abhi, deer calf, doe, the doe, abhi chakshita, would see, tarhi bhav, at that time, Saha, he, Varshapatihi, Maharaj Bharata, Prakriti, Stena, happy, Manasa, within his mind, Tasmai, unto it, Ashishaha, Ashaste, bestows benedictions. Svasti, all auspiciousness. Stut, let there be. Vatsa, O my dear calf. Te, unto you, Sarvatah, in all respects, iti, thus. You want to try and read this with some comprehension? I'm going to try and read the English. What's that meaning? Translation.
Then Maharaj heard see where the near was. In this way, he would look for it, and then he could see that the deer was comfortably situated, his mind and heart very satisfied, and he would bestow his blessings upon the deer, saying, "My dear calf, may you be happy in all this life."
Right. The curse is attraction for Madhavardhan, one devotee. So he was walking with Prabhupada, told me he was walking with Prabhupada in the morning, the devotees in France. And it was out in the morning. There was this lady with her poodle, and she was kissing her poodle. And Prabhupada looked at her and just looked away. Because his attraction for the deer was so intense, Bharata Maharaj could not concentrate upon worshipping the Lord or performing his ritualistic ceremonies. Even though he was engaged in worshipping the deity, his mind was restless due to his inordinate affection. While trying to meditate, he would simply think of the deer, wondering where it had gone. In other words, if one's mind is distracted from worship, a mere show of worship will not be of any benefit. The fact that Bharata Maharaj had to get up at intervals to look for the deer was simply a sign that he had fallen down on the spiritual platform. So it's, you know, several what verses now, right? Yeah. Discussing how somebody might have compassion, right? You know, for all living entities, but Prabhupada says this is not very good because, you know, it's just simply for the external body of a living entity. You're not really helping them. You're not helping yourself. Even though it's a common conception, we should, you know, have compassion for people, feed the poor people. Yeah? And then, you know, he gave up all, he renounced everything, family, wife, house, and everything else, but he started keeping a pet. Right? Yeah, this is so common. People need this. You know. And what's the thing? I'm everybody's best friend. Yeah, like that. And you have to think that. And it's very subtle, but it's really powerful contamination. Like that. Krishna's everybody's best friend. Yeah. So if we can represent Krishna, that's okay. Any comments? Does this bring anything to mind? Anybody have any thoughts about this purport? It brings something to my mind. The classical English literature.
In my opinion, he bestowed his blessings upon you.
Yes.
Sometimes many people approach and ask for blessings.
Yes.
Sometimes he
would. Yes. It depends if they are. If it's the son of a butcher, you should say, "Don't live, don't butcher, don't live, don't die." If it's the son of a king, you should live, they live for a long time. If it's the son of a Brahmin, may you die, a Brahmachari, may you die immediately. So I guess you try and give blessings in terms of the person's position. Yeah. What is the most famous book in the English, famous drama in the English language? Romeo and Juliet. To be or not to be. That's the most famous phrase. And so anyway, the whole, what's the story? You know the story of Hamlet? You know the story of Hamlet?
Yeah. Well,
huh?
Wow.
Huh?
I think I'm getting an
exception. Oh, okay. His father had died, yeah, and in this very short time after that, you know, the story starts. They've seen the ghost of the departed king, and he's saying, "You know, I was something happened. Called my son." So he comes back from wherever he's in France in education. The ghost says that actually your uncle killed me, like that. They married your mother and stuff like that. And the ghost goes away. So he's not sure whether he should act or not. Maybe the ghost is trying to trick him into killing his uncle and go to hell. And, you know, so all these things happen. He's not sure, you know. And really a lot of nice things. It's very interesting things for understanding Western culture and preaching, you know, about remarriage. A lot of it's about remarriage, right? Whether, if your husband dies in the war and you're only 22 years old and you have a child by him, should he get remarried? That's a Parasara's Dharma Shastra. Madhu not so lenient. But if you look in the popular media, like Look Magazine, Time, you know, right after World War II, was a big discussion in the popular media of what they should do, because these girls had like, well, yeah, 22 years old, and they had a baby, and the husband didn't come back. And you know, I remember when I was a child, my ladies would still wear all black. Widows would just dress all in black like that. You know. So it's a big decision. What should we do? And they thought, you know, well, the final conclusion kind of was, well, if girls want to, you know, remain as faithful widows like that and wear black and stuff like that, then we should all help them and stuff like that. But if not, then okay, nobody should criticize them because it's too much, you know. Yeah, so they want to get remarried or something. So, but it was a big thing about remarrying, you know. And so Hamlet's mother, he was just talking to somebody. He said, the cooked meats at the funeral feast did but do double duty as cold cuts at the wedding feast. And she was remarried before the meat was, you know, was finished like that, you know. So he was criticizing her for this, you know, all these things like that. You know. That's one aspect of it. You know. And it goes on and on like that. A lot of it's about reincarnation, you know, like that. You know, a lot of it there. You can see there's the Christian culture is there and the Greek culture. They're both combined with no particular problem for anybody's consciousness that we're talking about both these things. You know. And his father said, I died with my sins full blown like the month of May with no chance to purge myself of my austerities, and so I have to go to hell for some time to pay for all this. And I said, I can't tell you what happens in hell. You know? If I told you, your hair would stand on end, your eyes would bulge from your sockets, and your blood would run cold in your veins. So be good. Yeah. Yeah. But it's very interesting because the Kshatriya has always, you know, he's killing animals, chastising people, enjoying sense gratification. So yeah, there's all this. He's a good person. He's just naturally all his reactions. So he should do austerities and end of his life. So Shakespeare is very good for preaching about Varnashram Dharma and showing people this is our culture. It's not something different, you know. So the idea is about, you know. So he's trying to figure out whether this is true or not. The real thing is what is the basis for action, to be or not to be. So this is precise. You can tell the story in such a way that people think you're talking about Arjuna. It's precisely the same story, you know. This is a prince, and he had to, you know, kill his own family members, chastise them like that. He wanted to avoid the situation, not have to do it. But in the end, he was forced by his own destiny, you know, into this position like that. And he realized that we have a destiny, we can't avoid it. So the best thing is to try and do it the best you can like that. You know? So you know, his conclusion of Hamlet is to be or not to be. You know? To take arms against a sea of troubles, a sea of Kauravas, and by opposing, end them. Or to die, to sleep, you know, go away from the whole thing. Ah, but there's the rub. There's the problem. Because who knows what dreams may come after we have shuffled off this mortal coil. So Arjuna has the same thing. I may go away or walk away from the battle, but I'm going to take my mind and my nature and my karma with me. And so even in the forest, he's saying, oh, come with me. Who knows what dreams may come after we have shuffled off this mortal coil. I would count myself king of infinite space, bound up in a nutshell, if only I did not have bad dreams. Yeah? The mind. Yeah. People say it was the first thought, introspective novel. The Greeks thought about things. The Middle Ages came and it was all just simply external activity, reaction, judging. And then Hamlet was the first play where they actually started, again, like thinking about the internal life. Yeah. And he says, who would suffer? The proud man's contumely fall down, some embarrassment fall down. Who would fartles bear? Fartles are also called faggots. They're like pieces of wood you bind up to take for like, you know, burning, you know. Low-class guy's job, embarrassed like a big guy who's falling down. Who would suffer all these things? 1,000 natural shocks the flesh is heir to. If, but with a bare bodkin, it's kind of a short sword, he can make his own quietus make. He says, I'll finish it all, like that, you know. But the dreams. And so the sickly, so the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with a paler cast of thoughts. And conscience doth make cowards of us all. Very, you know, intense. Hansa said, the Prabhupada said you could teach it in Gurukula, in Shakespeare. If you understand word power, read Shakespeare. And then Gopi Pralanadana said, I think it was in London, and he heard Prabhupada give a whole lecture on the Merchant of Venice. I don't think it was recorded. And later on, he found in Bengal, Mathura Banik. It was this translation, Mathura Banik, you know, Merchant of Venice. You know. Probably somebody had done a good job to catch the language like that and translating it. There was this whole thing about Hansa that his disciples should be reinitiated. He should, you know, he fell down, so they should really select a new ISKCON guru and be reinitiated. This whole thing was this pressure on them. And Sukh Damodar was kind of wavering. Well, you know, maybe he should wait a little bit or something. So I quoted this thing about, you know, the cook meets the funeral feast did, but do double duty at the wedding feast. And he went, wow. You know, so maybe in such an important relationship, we can let them wait a little bit before they go picking somebody else. You know? So it was just, this fact is potent. You know? Now there's a new theory. I told this one. That actually Miguel Cervantes and William Shakespeare are the same person. Right? So Cervantes wrote Don Quixote, which is the greatest Spanish classic. And people say it's a fantastic piece of literature, you know. So now, and it isn't like this crazy because he goes through like his analysis or things like that. It's like, that. Now we have one more step to take. And that is Miguel Cervantes, William Shakespeare, and Bopadeva, who wrote the Bhagavad Gita, right? We're all the same person like that. And what was his real name? His real name was, I don't know that. So this is the world of literature, because they argue whether or not who wrote these plays, because Shakespeare was a son of a glove maker, you know, and he wouldn't have had all his knowledge of court stuff, and how could he have written this stuff? And
did he study the Vedas? Huh? Did he study the Vedas, or people
taught him to study? No, Shakespeare, I don't think, had any contact. No. But then he didn't. Mm-hmm. But the Christian tradition had all these things, which comes from the Vedas, and also the Greeks. Yeah. But so some people say, who do they say? Who are some of the suggestions actually wrote if it wasn't Shakespeare? You know? Christopher Marlowe, about the same time, really good. So there's other good playwrights then, you know. And I was mentioning the Duchess of Malfi, you know, thing. And so Mark Twain gave his conclusion. The works of Shakespeare were written by Shakespeare or somebody else of that name. Right? And so that's the point, is that they're self-evident. And whoever it was, and what else, we don't know anything else about him, you know. His whole life is there, a character. So it's like, you know, this Srimad Bhagavatam was written by God or somebody else of that name. It's just, this is a self-evident book. It has to have been written by, you know, somebody so elevated that it's beyond our level of analysis or anything else like that. You know? Yeah. So, okay, the play goes on. And he finally gets this way to figure out. These players come to the castle. It's a rustic castle in Denmark. And, you know, they come there and he meets them. He says, oh, I saw you in Paris. This and that. He said, there's a play. You know, this play, can you do it like this and that? And he said, yeah, can you change this line and that line? Yeah, you know. So he does a play. And the play is this queen, she's saying, king is saying, I'm an older guy, and I married you, you're younger than me, and I'm probably going to die soon. And you should remarry, like that, you know. He says, no. Never remarry, and may I be locked away from all pleasures and sunlight forever if I ever remarry. And they say that a woman who marries a second husband kisses a second husband in bed, murders the first one twice. Like that. You know, all these heavy things, you know. So he asks his mother, he says, what do you think about this? And she says, I think she's protesting too much. He thinks the lady doth protest too much, you know. So he's got her, like, you know. And then what happens is the king is sleeping, resting sometime, and his brother comes and pours poison in his ear like that, you know, his brother, you know. And then he's watching the king very carefully, and he becomes more and more agitated, irritated, and finally gets up and just storms out like that. And Hamlet says, okay, you know, we've got it confirmed, you know. So then after that, he goes and he sees his uncle praying like that, you know. And he pulls out his sword and he says, now we may do it pat. You know, now we just get the revenge, you know. Then he says, yam yam vapi smaram bhavan tajati antikalevaram tam tam evayate kuntaya sadata bhava bhavitaha. Which translation? Yeah, she says here, you know, I'm the only son of my father, and this man who murdered my father and sent him to hell, you know, I'm going to kill him while he's praying and send him to heaven. You know, this is not revenge, this is hire and pay, you know. Let me catch him when he's engaged in some more ghastly activity, incest twixt the sheets, you know, gambling and swearing and at cups, drinking. And then his soul, his head will turn to hell, and his feet will kick at heaven, and his soul will depart for that black place the same as his heart. Look like that, you know, like that. But he doesn't know that before he started this, you know, his uncle's name, what is it, Claudius or something? Something like that, you know, yeah. He's actually, what he's saying, like, God, I have so much, he saw the play, and he's thinking so many things I've done, and everything else, and he said, God, well, let me pray now, you know. But what I pray for, you know, when I'm still possessed of all those things for which I did my crime, my queen, my kingdom, how can I pray sincerely, God, forgive me, you know? Okay, well, at least let me try. There's twofold force in prayer to save us from falling down, and once we've fallen down, to maybe lift us up. So let me, you know, bend knees, sinews, so bow down and pray. You know? So he's praying, and then Hamlet sees him like this, and then goes away. Then afterwards he says, this is not working, you know. My words, you know, I'm saying the words, but my mind and my heart are staying right here with all these things I still possess, you know. Words without thoughts to heaven never go. It's exactly the same thing. You know, words without thoughts to heaven never go. And other things too, but it's such a rich literature. And it's actually a nice project. I was actually going to make a drama out of this, like, or something, like, you know, comparing, you know, Hamlet and Shakespeare. Like, do Lotuses Grow in the Avon? That's one title, you know. Like that. Bombay Bill. He would be in Bombay and meet Vyasadeva, and they have discussions. They would talk about their characters like that. In the background, and you have, like, these things happening, like scenes like that. So it's one way of staging it like that. Still, maybe happen. Actually, it would be good. It would be a good, popular drama to show that these two cultures are just so similar. You know, all the content and everything else. Yeah. So many things. It goes on and on like that. You know, so this is the one point here, right? That Bart is experiencing the same thing. His thoughts are here because he hasn't given up his attachment to this worldly object, and therefore his. And his all his activities and stuff don't have any effect like that. You know? So we have to say the mantra, and Krishna appreciates that we're doing that, right? We're saying it with the lips. It's like a karma yoga, do it. But then after that it has to come to jnana yoga. This is jnana yoga. Understand what it means and what the process is and like that. Okay, analytically. Then jnana, you have to get your mind, right? You have to actually have to think about the mantra. Yeah? Because you see your mind's going everywhere. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, it's austerity. Because the mind likes to think about so many things, you know? Yeah, no? You bring it back. And he said, she said, they said, I will. You know, hate, fear, lust. Yeah? Okay. What's next? We're doing it, we understand it, we're thinking about it. Meaning. Yeah, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you got to chant with some meaning like that. Give me this, give me that, you know, whatever. And what is the basic meaning of the mantra? Yeah, Father said, the basic meaning is please engage in your service. I always give this example. Yeah, that's what things going. One ashram in Oakland, California. after Prabhupada became popular, and then also the guru also started engaging in chanting Maha Mantra. You know? It was, you know, upbeat. BMWs outside and stuff. It was like, you know, more rich folks ashram. So the picture of their guru about the size of this wall here, this, you know, bus type thing on the wall. And the hall was about maybe like about three times as long as this. So all the girls were on one side and women and the men and boys on the other side. And all the girls were chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then all the women were chanting Hare, no, all the men were chanting Hare Rama, Hare Rama. What the meaning was, they've been taught, was they're telling, all the women were telling the men, you are Krishna, you are Krishna. Remember, remember, you are Krishna. So then they were all chanting, you are Rama, the goddess of fortune. You are Rama, remember, remember. It was the most, one Christmas he went around distributing books, because he had so many from the collections like that. So I got a list of all the yoga ashrams in the Bay Area, and he was going giving them free books like that, you know. And that was the most demoniac. Other places were just kind of lusty, you know, they had yoga ski retreats in the French Alps and this kind of stuff, you know. You know, by the way, other places, they you know, they were, it was evil, you know. If they could find baby Krishna, they would have killed him. It was like this really, like, really organized. And, you know, I mean, the slogans were like, it was all the things we love, you know. On the outside, they had this little ocean, on the picture of the ocean. And his hand was coming out like this, touching itself out of the water, you know. And it said, become that which thou art, right? You know? The other one was, see God within you as you, you know, right? Tatvamasmi, you know. Another one speech he gave one time, he said, in the end we'll realize we are all Shambhu, right? We're all Lord Shiva. In this lifetime, Durga is my mother. Give me this, give me that. But in my next lifetime, she'll be my wife. It was evil. All the things we like, you know. We want to get your digestion fired up or something. Go there like that. You know? The one girl, actually, she was in the ashram living there and stuff. They had a restaurant, everything. And she finally realized what this yogi was saying. How we all, you know, our personal identity just ceases to exist at some point, you know. And then she was just went into this extreme paranoia, depression, you know. And finally, she had Prabhupada's book, she read it and said it saved her life. She was about to kill herself. If this was the conclusion and everything was become void, you know, why not do it now, you know. So Prabhupada's book saved her. And then one of our life members, Chimanbhai Patel, he had a friend who was trying to convince him to follow this yogi and everything else. And he said, this guy is bogus. And he says, you know, everything else. Chimbabwe, my strong devotee. He said, watch, I'll open this book and we'll see it's all nonsense. You know, so he opened the book and the yogi was describing how he's meditating and doing all these things. And finally he came up to this point where he saw this blue pearl. You know, and that was the objective, you know. And he was trying to go through this door to get there. And then the guy, some voice said, you can't come in here for some reason like that. And that was it, you know. So he had to go back, you know. And he said, right there, he wasn't allowed to enter into this place like that. And he said, look, it's right here. It's not to do this, you know. And some mystic potency, you know, like that. But it was, you know, definitely demoniac consciousness. So what is the meaning of the mantra? You know, again, two thieves, or, you know, by the side of the road, and he said, oh, when the Vaishnavas go by chanting Radhe, Radhe, I like it, you know. Why? Because the barber's wife is named Radhe, you know. Yeah. Or one old lady, she's, you know, Satori? She goes to get this wood, and she's bringing it back to her village to sell, and all the wood falls on the ground, she cannot possibly pick it up. She's going, Narayan, Narayan! And he appears in front of her, you know, Mom, what do you want? Please put all the wood back on my head. Are you sure it's what you want? Yeah, please, put the wood back on my head. So, Prabhupada says we're chanting again and again. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Yeah. And Prabhupada gives the story of the woodcutter and the Kapha Riksha tree. Get to that story. Their eyes got red. Bit when the tiger came. So many stories like that. So maybe your chanting is 60% pure, 40%, you know, stupidity, ignorance or passion. You know? So what do you get? You get some advancement, but it's slow and it's mixed up with all these different things. You know? So yeah, Prabhupada says, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Yeah, eventually it'll work. Well, why do we follow all these rules and regulations? Well, it's like food. If you eat food properly, you get a faster result, Prabhupada's saying. If you chant properly, so he recommends so much reading, and so much job, so much kirtan, right? Put it together. So many details. And then you find that's the whole purpose is for this. You know, basically for, I don't know, which is the best process? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Bhadasavanam. How would you compare Smaranam to Kirtanam? This is actually from the Briha Bhagavatamrita. Yeah? The Vishnu Dutas say they prefer Kirtan. Whereas Gopal Kumar, when he was in, what's the place? Maharloka, they were all talking about Smarana. You know? So there's an argument then, well, what's the use of kirtan without Smarana? And it goes back and forth, and the Vishnu Dutas are saying that kirtan will automatically engage you in the rest of these things, plus it's beneficial for other people, like that. And so, but then they say, yeah, okay, but if you're engaged in pure Smarana, and you actually are remembering Krishna, they say, well, we have no objection to that, it's actually working. So finally, the conclusion is that there's just two sympathetic processes. Without Smarana, kirtan is actually, has to come to that point. And we actually, in your heart, you're actually, you know, meditating on Krishna, not just with your lips, or thinking about something else. On the other hand, that the best way to achieve Smarana is using through kirtan. Mm-hmm. Even better than job, that kind of stuff, a good kirtan. Mm-hmm. So, otherwise, if we see, you know, our mind is being deviated by all these things, and, you know, especially affection for some living entity, you know, like that. And again, the contamination is, you know, I've got to take care of this animal, that animal, this helpless little animal, right? Yeah. So watch out. Some puppy comes to your door, homeless puppy. Go to hell. Which, Maya. Yeah. So any question? Comment? Yeah, yes sir. Yeah.
What you're saying is feeling now. Why does Krishna think he's being successful?
Why did he?
Krishna makes the demons successful using the name of, you know,
all these bogus yogis? Because there are people with that particular desire. They need a leader to, you know, to stimulate their desires and make them sing.
Father Moni does not give his child poison.
Huh?
Father Moni does not give his child poison.
No, but maybe he gives him something, you know, which is better than something else. Like that,
yeah.
Maybe something else. Yeah. But in the end, he has to. You know, he has free will. He doesn't, you know. We have free will, it's our nature. You know, so Krishna is just, doesn't give it to us, it is who we are. So therefore, he has to...
If he does not use it against us,
carry your car around your neck. No, Prabhupada, when they asked Prabhupada that question, he said, no, he said, not just India. He said, all over the world people are starving. And he said, and when I was in New York, there were people lying in the street with urine on their bodies, vomiting, and hungry people in the streets and could not get food. And the man said, well, so some few people. Prabhupada said, no, there were many. You know? So yeah, there's relative things. Within the United States, there are certain places that are more affluent. In the South, like Louisiana and Mississippi and places like that, sometimes the economy is so bad, you know. One black devotee, he said his uncle would just take his two daughters to the, you know, decent-looking house and say, you know, knock on the door and say, ma'am, these are my two girls, and he just, please, we're having a tough time. Just, they'll do anything you want them to do in terms of working and stuff like that, right? Yeah, you know. So all we ask, you please give them a little lunch like that and keep them busy, and I'll come back this evening. And they say, well, okay, we'll do that, you know. And I know it goes on in Calcutta too, helping hands, you know. And it's just, so, you know, different economies all over the world. And, you know, personally, I've never seen anybody starving to death in India. You know. In 78, things were bad, but now there's an economic index. Maybe you know this one? It's called Street Dog Index. Yes? Wherever you go, look at the street dogs. It's very indicative. Around here, there's no street dogs. They kill them all, you know. But you go in India, when I was there in 78, God, these dogs were like, this dog, you know, diseases in their bodies, broken tails, you know. But now you look at them, by 10 o'clock in the morning, they're kicking back, you know, relaxing, stout. And now there's different breeds. You know, they're being sexually discriminate. So you see, the, you know, all the economy's tough, but bull, nah. So they're at the bottom of the chain, the street dog, you know. And they're doing okay. It's like, you know, you know, things are looking up, you know. Yeah. So, again, it's, you know, different. That's one thing, is that it's everywhere like that. And then, so then the thing is, well, is this the cause of this problem? You know, is it the Indian philosophy? And we say, yeah, in some ways, probably because they have deviated. It's not because they're following this, they deviated. That was the reason that all these things happened. The Brahmins started deviating from the Vedic culture. Otherwise, they would find all these things very, you know, nicely. You know, I mean, having so much food you have, you know, you have diabetes is not opulence. You know, having the right amount of food and exercise and, you know, wholesome life, that's opulence. You know? And also, too, then there is this thing about the reaction. You know, I mean, Americans get there. How do you get your money? You know, some thief may be living very, very well and so on like that, but people know that, you know, something may catch up with him and he may suffer, you know, more than he ever thought was worth it, you know, like that. So we're talking about, you know, reincarnation and karma then too, which, you know, so it exists and stuff like that, you know. But at least we can see, we can even look at it, you know, how are these Americans making this money? And I mean, most people, you know, realize that American corporations don't always make all their money, and, you know, I can give many examples, you know. Was it Nestle's? You know, Nestle's is the, you know, is your friend, Nestle's. You know, of course, it's a thing that they were giving this baby formula, right, to these little girls in the mountains in Bolivia. They had their babies, so they gave them free baby formula. You know, this will make your baby big and strong like an American. You know, they gave them just enough until the natural milk had dried up, then they had to pay. It's a great marketing technique, right? Then some of them couldn't pay, so their babies died of maldiet like that. So then they had, the irony was, some of them, when they had little graves there, they put the cans of Nestle's on the grave like that. Really, like, you know, so that got out. And Nestle's had to do a lot of propaganda to, you know, cover that up, you know. But it was a great technique, right? You know, it was a marketing technique. And that's our profit, is our goal. They discovered how they could get sugar for soft drinks, better from sugar beets and this kind of stuff, than from being all this cane sugar from the Philippines. So they just closed their factories, you know. And something like about, like, you know, I don't know, like, I don't know, how much, 7,000 people were out of work, you know. And so nobody just directly died of starvation, but from malnutrition, lack of proper medication, everything else, some people died. What to speak of people suffering like anything. Well, I said, what do you paid them until, as long as we needed them? That's business, you know. No, it's a certain thing, you got to, like, slow things down and take care of people. So it goes on and on like that. And Dr. Jariwala, he used to work with Linus Pauling. He's a good example. I was using her as an example, him as an example for the Mataji who was, you know, killing rat, doing genocide on rats. He was working with Linus Pauling. And he started visiting the temple, and eventually he worked himself into a position where now he's working for a German pharmaceutical company which produces vitamins from organic sources, like that, natural sources. And they're distributing them. He's part of the project which is distributing them at reduced cost to people in Africa, where there's, like, you know, it's malnutrition, and so vitamins are, you know, really essential. And they're even giving to people with AIDS, you know, HIV positive. And that helps, it builds their body up so the immune system can work better, and then they, you know, they can live longer and don't have to take so much of the AIDS medication. What happened is the company was selling the AIDS medications, started seeing their profits dropping because people were getting these vitamins and stuff. So they started attacking them on, you know, really viciously about giving vitamins for AIDS, and it was really incredible, you know. He submitted, along with four other totally bona fide scientists, you know, studies about this and how it helps and this and that. The journals wouldn't publish it, wouldn't even respond like that. So he before he thought, like, science is wonderful, the scientific community is what helps people. Now he's coming to this point, he's seeing, like, wow, it's just, the science is so many times tied into the economic thing, and these people don't really care if they're killing people or not, you know, as long as there are profits there. They're not killing them, but they're taking 15 years off their life, you know, like that. You know? So he's really changed a lot in terms of, like, now he distributes books, goes out and distributes books and everything like that. You know? But so, you know, what are the reactions, everything else like that. But we have free will. And so then with that, you know, then Krishna gives us, and ultimately we don't die. We don't, you know, it's all, you know, it's all just a dream. You know, it's basically, if your child wants to watch this King Kong movie at 9 o'clock at night, or some horror movie at 9 o'clock at night, you know, you say, you shouldn't watch that, you shouldn't watch that. He's screaming and, you know, beating his face on the wall, bleeding, You say, all right, watch the movie, you know. So that's for, if you want, and then after that is nightmares, and next morning you tell him that, did you learn something? Yeah, I don't watch horror movies, you know. That's Kali Yuga. You know, just, we tried to teach you, we tried to talk to you and everything else, but you know, you cannot, ultimately you have, you know, free will. So try it out. You know, this is Kali Yuga. And then, you know, people learn the hard way. But ultimately, yeah, we do not, you know, allow them to destroy themselves and everything else. Krishna creates a little environment, and it's also basically just a movie. First time Prabhupada saw it, it was on an airplane. Oh, sometimes Prabhupada saw the first like a Western movie, you know. It was Dillinger, this big gangster, you know. And Prabhupada was watching it, and Prabhupada had a hard time telling who were the criminals and who were the police, like that. These are criminals on there, but those are the good guys. Well, okay, you know. But he saw the whole thing, and he said, so realistic. You know? Indian movies kind of, even they just don't, even now, because realism is kind of a hard thing, but American movies, it's like, you know, it's, I mean, it's even the actions, the emotions, the responses, the effects, it's just like, yeah, it is. So, you know, when you combine it with the Indian story and American, you know, theater, you get these fantastic things, you know, out like that. And later on in the story, that, you know, I guess probably, he saw, watched the whole thing, saw it, okay, it's good technique, no content. And he was on the airplane, and he was a security. I think he said he was like, you know, this movie, you're, probably watched this for a couple of seconds, and he started working, doing his work like that, and he was just absorbed in his work. And Shri Chaitanya was trying to read Prabhupada's book, and he kept like, you know, couldn't control his mind, you know. So after about 40 minutes, you know, it was an action movie, you know, James Bond or something like that, you know, guys jumping off of trains, and you know. And so finally after 40 minutes, Prabhupada looked up and said, I'm still alive. Like that, you know. Realized, yeah, it was ridiculous. Nobody's gonna, you know, jump off these trains and have guys shooting out of the machine gun. Like that. It was just like, you're gonna realize it was just ridiculous. And he started reading and stuff. Like that, you know, yeah. So, it's my point here. Yes. Okay. There. Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah. This is the whole dialogue, right, between when Maharaj Parikshit says, like, who has done this to you? Cut off your three legs. And he goes through this long philosophical discussion about what is the cause of our distress, like that. And part of it is that I can't blame anybody else because there is justice in the world, they say, and so this is just a reaction for things I've done myself. So how can I call him the perpetrator? They ask Jesus the same thing. It's a complicated, it's a common question, you know. And so if somebody is like, you know, doing some painful thing to somebody, that's just a reaction they deserve, right? And so he says, true it is, he says it twice, you know. He says, true it is that evil must come into this world, but woe unto him by whom it comes. You know? For it were better for him he were never born. Other time he says, it were better for him a great millstone, you know, for grinding the wheat, was tied around his neck and he was dropped in the middle of the ocean, like that. Like that. So yeah, this is the point, is that sometimes we have, you know, there's different amounts of free will in different places like that. It's complicated, you know. So at some point somebody, you know, this is just a reaction somebody getting for their activities, but sometimes you don't have to be the guy who does it, like that. And so, okay, I would have to cause this reaction like that. And so, you can, you know, and then if it has to go on, then God will make some arrangement to take care of it like that, you know. Yeah. So free will is, sometimes there's free will, sometimes there's not free will. You know? Sometimes we're, you know, our reactions are coming, and sometimes there's, you know, there's flexibility, sometimes there's not. You know? You did something and now the reaction is there. You know? It's like, you know, cows. We think, oh, I'm going to save all these cows from, you know, from being butchered, you know. But why are they being butchered? But why are they getting this, why are they suffering? Why are they? Most likely they were butchers. You know, today, this is in Spanish. Carne, carnicero is the butcher. Carne is meat. What is a butcher? It's carnicero con karma. It's butcher with meat. Meat is a butcher with karma. Like that. It's a real kind of striking phrase in Spanish. Like that. This is a, you know. And so yeah, people are getting the reactions like that. And for that reason, but then there's also this opportunity that Krishna's also allowing some people sometimes to be compassionate. And so that's just the way it goes. And so if we don't do that, that's what Bhaktisiddhanta was saying, then you become hard-hearted. You know? Because yes, this is, the world is set up to give us a chance to experience these things like compassion, honor, you know justice, you know, in a material perspective. But if you do that, it actually makes you begin to see it like from a higher perspective. And it's actually the only reason it exists. You know? So you'll probably find that. What is the essence of justice? Harsh Chandra? Huh? Yeah? What is it Daya or Satya? Justice. Yeah? It's holding the Harsh Chandra, the movie writer. Daya, Satya, Daya, Satya. So that's the key. What the Prabhupada said, you want to understand how to organize ISKCON, and you should go to the Catholic Church, you know, follow them. You know? So I took Hari Vilas to see this guy. He was Father Diebold. And he's the Archdiocese of Oakland. He was in charge of the canon law section, which is their internal court system for judging things, defrocking priests and all this kind of stuff. It was very interesting because they had like a whole organized system and stuff like that. And if somebody accuses some priest of engaging in adulterous activities with his wife in the congregation or something like that, he says, at least they say, and there he said, at least for his group, he says, we take these things seriously. You know, if somebody complains, then we want it to be a clear, complaint, not just some grumbling and stuff like that. If you want to make a complaint, because people also have a right to their reputation. So you can't go around, diminishing people's reputations like that. If it's a complaint, make it. And he said, then we come down hard and clear. But if people will cooperate with us, we never throw them to the wolves. We just stick with them all. If we go to prison, we're with them all the time in prison for whatever like that. That was their, other places that it probably hasn't worked like that. Because that was their idea. So we're talking about all these things, and what's this retribution, what happens of this and that. And then the priest looks at us and says, but you know that mercy is the essence of justice, right? And we go, oh, yeah, of course, yeah, we forgot. It's like, wow, learned something from the Catholic. But that's the same point. The essence of justice is not truth, fortunately, what you deserve. Is ultimately a kindness. Science doesn't accept that. There's no mercy in science. So, and then people are forgiving. Yeah?
So, just when the mind body is talking about my sister, and a lot of people are really into Buddhism. It's like, she got an Om tattoo.
Om tattoo. It's not Buddha, that's something else. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think she
okay.
But I was trying to explain to her how Krishna consciousness views in personalism and individualism.
Yeah.
That you don't want to lose that.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose what you can give personally to Krishna or to God. And she has some great emotion about it.
Yeah.
So how would you describe
We have a professor of world religions. I mean, most people who say I'm a Buddhist or something like that, they've read something somewhere and they have, a very vague idea, And he talks to them, well, what do you mean by Buddhism? That's a problem. What do you mean by Buddhism, And they would say something, and they like this and like that, and so you have something they like, you know. And also, there's no religion telling you what to do and stuff like that. And you go, okay, so. So sometimes it may be good things, bad things. First thing is just to ask people what they really mean by their philosophy, you know, and to avoid like this personality conflicts of my, you know, my daddy can kill your daddy, you know, Jehovah can kill Allah, and, you know, it's okay, my guru is better than your guru. And probably I would avoid that. I would say, you always ask and say, do you know Guru so-and-so? And probably say, Guru who? What is his philosophy? Even if he knew him, he would go back to the philosophy and keep it. So that's the first thing, is just to listen, to find out what they actually believe and stuff like that. You know? And in most cases, I mean, people don't have any... I mean, to really understand Buddhism, you actually could do a fair amount of work. You know? And even the teachers who are teaching Buddhism, they just kind of have... They kind of know something about their... They usually know technique and rituals and that, you know, their group and like that. But they don't really know, like, their tradition that well, where it's coming from or anything else like that. But other than that, there's, again, then again, it's too, it's like, you know, it's like, I was in the park one time, Golden Gate Park, chanting like this, and some oriental gardener was cleaning down, and he says, you believe Buddha? And I said, it was spontaneous, I said, oh yes, we believe Buddha, a golden Buddha from India. And he said, oh, I never hear that Buddha. And he says, Gauranga Buddha, India, very, 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 very good Buddha. And he said, oh, okay. Because there are many Buddhas, you know. But yeah, Lord Chaitanya is a Buddha. He's a Buddha. He's, you know, he's Buddha. You know? So he's a Gauranga Buddha. He's, oh, very good. You know? Yeah. Most Buddhists, as far as I know, are following Amitabha Buddha. Now, when was he dated at? What time?
Amitabha.
Yeah, the Buddha. Buddha.
As far as my understanding, he's up in the Pure Land.
What was it called?
The
Sukhapati. Which is in the west, it's in the west because China's, you have to go to India, so you go to the west. This is Dr. Kesikas's point. It was like it flowed down to China, so they see heaven as being west, and we see it as being east. You know? And that's why Monkey and Piggy are going with Suzan, you know, on the order of the Tang Emperor to get these, because all they have apparently is Karma Mimamsa scriptures, and by going to see the Tathagata Buddha, you know. Has gone there, Buddha, in Vulture Mountain, then they can get the Moksha Dharma scriptures. And God, they go through unbelievable number of things like that. It's 100 chapters. It's a Chinese classic. Like I say, it's a first-rate adventure novel. It is, and along the way, they meet all kinds of... Is this story like Don Quixote? Ah, probably the same person wrote this. At the same time. About the same time. Who was this guy, actually? See, he was traveling like that. He was writing stuff as he went. But I'm chapter 96 out of 100 chapters, and God, they've gone through so many things, Monkey, Piggy, and this guy, and along the way they get so many lessons, you know, about, you know, at one point this demon's wife is disturbed and coming and complaining and screaming and yelling, and the demon just keeps smiling and saying, yes, dear, yes, 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 dear, and after about 10 minutes she kind of calms down and stuff like that, and this is, you know, how to keep tranquility in your household relations and stuff, you know. Yeah. But then Amitabha Buddha, he wrote like what, 100 things or something, or that if I don't do this, if I become a Buddha, then may I never become a Buddha. And one of them was he was going to establish Sukhavati, the pure land, where there's no death, and things like that. And one of the things is simply if you call upon his name at the time of death, he'll come and take you to Sukhavati. So this is, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe how he's an incarnation or a Shakti Vekta avatar or something like that, but basically it's a personalist philosophy. There's a land, there are things there, and you call it, he's a person, you call his name, you know. So that's the majority of Buddhists are worshipping Amitabha.
Yeah, is there philosophies
of people? It is unbelievable. I mean, Christians, they're atheistic Christians. There's a guy, Tilion de Chardin, that God is the Omega Principle or something like that. You know? There are Christians who believe that nobody can know God and he becomes, for Jesus Christ, he becomes, is God. You know, so it's, you know, the Indians too, the same thing. It's, our guru has become God. Nobody can know God. So our guru is God. You know? It's like it's unlimited numbers. Just, what do we got? We got Sri Lankan Buddhists. And now in America, one of the most popular ones I know of is when the Vietnamese guy who has a very kind of moral guy, has a kind of system and stuff like that, and forgiveness, and he has retreats and stuff and meditation programs, you know. So maybe, you know, she's come in contact with him. But it's just a, and also by reading these things on Wikipedia, they saying that, you know, that everybody admits that nobody has the primitive teachings of Buddha. Everybody's kind of got some kind of like adjusted thing from what Buddha apparently was talking about. And he basically was a social reformer at that time, really. A lot of, and people think that Buddhism means meditation and stuff like that. But to, I think to a Buddhist from Asia, it means more ethical conduct and right life. But we think it means like tantric. And the idea is this unbelievable sense gratification through Tibetan Buddhism. You know, through this tantric Buddhism and, you know, unbelievable weird things, you know, go on. So, but we generally care. Actually, it's an interesting thing, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a discussion of the 9 major points of Buddhism and refutation, and it's in the story of South India. And so I gave that to Miguel Polo in our debate, and he just, you know, went ballistic on a couple of them. Buddhists don't believe this, what is that, you know, and stuff. He was already there, his notes there and stuff, you know. And we went through the whole thing back and forth. But I had him, were you there, that thing? I mean, I got a disadvantage because it's a Catholic country, like, so it's like everybody believes in God, you know. So it's like kind of unfair debate, you know. But in the end, he said, you know, in the end, he said, because he knows this whole tradition, he says, okay, he says, in the end, yes, when Buddhists say there's no Atma, right, he said, I don't know what percentage to put it at, but it was over 80%, but 85%, 90% mean there's no mind, that the mind itself is not an eternal thing. They're not talking about an Atma the way that Christians talk about it, Catholics like that. So in the shows are shaking hands and smiling, you know. Like that, you know. So that's gotta find out what they're talking about.
Is that online?
No, it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I know Chaitanya's traveling in South India. He meets some Buddhists and they offer this untouchable food to him, and then published in the purport. I gave that to one boy who was becoming a Buddhist to read. He was wearing the robes and everything. I didn't say much at all, I gave it to him. And now he changed his mind. He became a devotee. Just giving stuff out. Hey, you can show her that. But I mean, this thing, that's just, it's very philosophical. The Buddhists say this, you know. And he goes and refutes them like that, you know. You know, for example, there's no source of knowledge except for Buddha. But point number 5, but point number 1 is that Buddha doesn't exist. It's like, kind of, you know, so, it's the point, it's stupid. I mean, if there's nothing, and Buddha himself is illusion. And they even say that, you know. If you meet, one Zen phrase, if you meet Buddha on the road, kill him. Because like, even the Buddha's illusion, you know. But so it's just like, you know, it's just this totally incomprehensible nihilistic idea. You know, it's just, you know, God is a circle with a center everywhere and no circumference. Well, why do you call it a circle? You know, the circle. Before he was really, because they're trained in logic. Many years ago, he was just sidestepping this question. One reporter asked him, "Do you believe in God or not?" He said, "Well, what do you mean by God?" And it was like he really just avoided the whole thing, you know. But now he's come out and just directly. Sometimes he's even stronger than that. He's just directly saying, he's even like, there is no God. You know, this is a big cause of problems, and it's a projection, anthropomorphic projection that causes problems for people.
You know? You should do what you believe in.
Or else if you believe everything. The general thing was, I mean, somebody say, you know, this, you know, Buddha, do you believe in God or not? There's this whole heavy political situation. And you know, some people say there's a God, some people say, what do you believe, Buddha? It was like, you know, it's a heavy situation. And Buddha said, Buddha says that you should find out. And that was the main thing. He never talked about these things. His whole point was that Just do, be good, don't hurt other people, you know, live a moral life, and make spiritual inquiry the primary focus of your life, like that, right? Real knowledge like that. He never talked about there was no God. Really, there was no God or not. It was just that I'm not going to talk about that, you know, but you should find out. And of course, the poison arrow one, that was the thing about, you know, somebody shoots you with a poison arrow, and you start speculating, who did that? Why did they do that? It was like, okay, things like that. No, take the arrow out. So first off, take care. Is there a God? Isn't there a God? All this stuff. Forget about that. First off, become a good person. And probably the same preaching. We'll kind of talk about God with them. You first say, first off, we have to become good people. And then specifically, that was eating meat. You say, first off, as long as we're eating meat, you have no intelligence to understand these questions. So first off, we have to become, you know, good people. Yeah. I don't drink until noon on something. But for somebody, that's a big austerity. You know, it's a big austerity. So, but that's, yeah.
So we have to do at least one less level.
Yeah. I mean, even guys in sports, they know, you know, no pain, no gain. You got to, everybody knows. It's probably says every single system, they all admit that without bhakti, it won't work. You can be a jnani, you can be anything like that, but they all say without, you know, some dedication to analysis or some dedication to austerity or to sport. Ultimately, you can see that everybody says, ultimately, that, well, then maybe bhakti is enough. Well, actually, yeah. But then, of course, I mean, it has to take, it becomes jnana, it becomes karma. Right? By itself, it's belief. You know, same thing, blind, I believe. You know, no, it has to have form and structure. Yeah,
that's what nobody wants to do, austerity or nobody wants to do.
And that's why Buddhism, the idea about Buddhism is that then with Buddhism, you just, you know, you just have to accept authority, everything else. Pranayananda Maharaj says, a Unitarian is a joke. A Unitarian is somebody, a joke. Not true about all Unitarians. Yeah. A Unitarian is somebody who's looking for God and hopes he doesn't find him. Yeah, and so that's one class of people like that. I know many very great Unitarians, you know, like that. So, but sometimes, yeah, it's a danger they have like that. We reject all. We're dogmatic anti-dogmatists like that, because as soon as there's some kind of dogma or something, you have to do something, follow some austerity like that. You know, he goes, "What's going on? Art? It's like we wrote this whole thing down about, you know, well, is this wrong?" And he says, "Well, under this circumstance, how can we say this and that?" And, well, what if a boy and girl engage in this? It's like, you know, this is sexual relations. Well, at the end of the passion of the moment, it's like the guy says, like, you know, I think it was a more conservative person showing the liberal position. The end, there's just nothing. The guy doesn't believe in it. There's nothing he won't, like, reason his way out of. You can do anything, whatever, like that, and so on. You know?
Well, there's the misconception that we're being controlled.
Yeah.
Then you're not thinking for yourself.
Yeah. Hawthorne
Street.
Nice place.
Now that's more like,
yeah. The Sahajas have their problem, the Maya bodies have their problem. The smart does. No, either way is this, is the Niyamagraha is this term. Become just addicted to these rules and regulations or neglect them. Mm-hmm. The main thing is to apply them properly, to accept authority properly. Okay, this is person's talking for my benefit. He knows what he's talking about. Okay, what should I do? You know, you should do this and that. Okay. Yeah. And other places too. You get in the South, they're much more authoritarian, like that in Texas and places like that. You know, and then, like, you know, they think about California and the West Coast is all, you know, guys are too liberal. We think they're too austere. So it's the same. It goes both ways like that. When I was in Tennessee, I was in Tennessee there, and I was talking. Tennessee is more, It's less spiritual than California, but more religious. And it's actually in some ways refreshing. You know, people, they go to church, they do things like that and stuff, you know. But on the other hand, it is kind of narrow-minded about it. We don't understand. You know?
It's just interesting part of God said the main thing and what was to do is the
Yeah.
And I was kind of amazed by his perception even early on is that, yeah, there's too many individuals.
Yeah. My friend David Donenfield, he said, 9 out of 10 people are on weird trips. And if you want to communicate with them, you've got to go back to their basic assumption, basic insanity, and start from there. So it's just like, that was kind of for California and places like that, like Oregon, you see, everybody's got their, you know, their own thing, and you've got to go back to find out what is their basic, you know, and then you can start talking about like something that goes, wow. It's a joke. You know, why is Portland like a breakfast cereal? Why is California like a breakfast cereal? Because when you get rid of all the fruits and flakes, there's nothing left but a bunch of nuts. As they say, you know, New York about California. Yeah. So this is the whole thing. Is this, the more you read Prabhupada's books on and on like that, and don't get blogged down. Just read something. Read and go through and. You begin to see all these different perspectives and ideas. And then when you meet people, you ask them questions and stuff and talk about it. And you see, like, what is they're really interested in, you know? And then you can just naturally just give them some idea so they can go up,
yeah.
You know?
There's a group that were talking about elves and fairies.
Yeah. Yeah. Gandharvas. Probably Gandharvas or fairies. The Morgan Le Fay. The death of Arthur, how you say that? La morte, morte di Arthur. It's the whole history about King Arthur and the sword and the stone, all this kind of stuff. It's, you know, legend. And Mallory, I think, wrote the oldest one, La morte di Arthur, that was in French. Yeah. So anyway, part of this whole history, is really seems like it's really contacting the Dwapara Yuga. And there was one fairy. Prabhupada says fairies are Gandharvas, says that one text, you know, Gandharvas, princess fairies. So the queen of the fairies is Morgana, and Morgan Le Fay, and they live on an island above the earth called Avalon, which you may have heard this word, right? And the next higher planetary system above the earth is Gandharva Loka. So it's an island just above the earth. And most of them are pretenders. Like when you challenge them and stuff, they run away like that. But some aren't, so you gotta be careful, you know? So it's the same description of their character in both the Vedas and in Arthur, same like that. You know? And goes on like that. You know? So, you know, for fairies, okay, I think the Rakshasas are trolls. You know trolls?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're big guys, they change shapes, they eat people, you know, magical things. So it's like you start looking at these characters and saying, yeah, it's like that, you know. And the imps, Kushmandas, I'm going to translate as imps. The impish guys, not really all that bad, but they like to do, you know, impish things, right? Do funny things, put your clothes upside down or something, you know, weird things, you know. So the Kushmandas, yeah. And they all exist, different species of life. You know? But now the earth is so, like, you know, just boring and gross, and they just hang out, and if they're on the earth at all, they hang out in these very celestial places like Mount Shasta or Oregon, Hawthorne Street. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Or they find some weird bookshop, you know, places like that. But you know, some places still, you know, pretty much to the end of the Kali Yuga, there are a few places that are like fit, you know, for these people. Other than that, you just go up to the higher levels and wait for, you know, Satya Yuga to come around again. When people taste better, like that, you know. Nowadays, it's like, you know, not good. Huh? So Prabhupada, can you die? Okay, so what happens tomorrow? Tomorrow is Maharata with his deer, like that. What's going to happen next? I guess this is what people, right, we got. The homosexuals, we got the king.